Welcome to the FemNation podcast, where we wholeheartedly believe women entrepreneurs can rise together. Success comes in many flavors. There are no secret strategies. Women entrepreneurs are rewriting history by defining success on their own terms. Hi, I'm White of Gannon, the down-to-earth chick with a different name. Entrepreneur and founder of the Female Entrepreneur Movement, our business is dedicated to helping women start and grow their businesses, increasing financial independence. Each week, join me for inspiring stories and powerful interviews of women entrepreneurs sharing their lessons to success to help you take your business to the next level. Now, let's go for it. Welcome back to the FemNation podcast. Today, I have an amazing guest that has done some amazing things inside the food world. And as a caterer slash chef, all extraordinaire, all the things, I want to welcome Melissa Arroyo to the show today. But more importantly, I want to highlight the fact that this woman has gone out there and done some huge things inside of the food movement and really set the tone for what she feels are the changes that are necessary for us, what we eat, what we consume, why we consume it, how we consume it. But I want to honor that space and time and thank her for coming on the show today. Melissa, tell us, after your travels to Italy, what did that look like when you came back?
After, you know, in my early 30s, I got a phone call and say, hey, mom is sick. So I picked family over career, and I decided to move back to the United States and to New Orleans. That's where my family's from, and started working here fine dining, and after a while, opened summer catering.
Wow. So tell me a little bit about that experience in Italy. What was a differentiating factor in those travels and, you know, learning as a chef in another country? What was it that intrigued you the most about that?
I was young and I wanted to eat the world. I wanted, and you know, you go into the culinary world because you have a chip on your shoulder and you want to prove something. Sure. You know, and you have to be insane to be in this profession, because being in this profession, being lazy, you're not going to cut it. You know, your work ethic has to be amazing. So my days off, I would have 2 days in 1 week and 2 days in another week. And I would combine them and have 4 days off and just basically research the area that I wanted to go and who I wanted to work with. And I just emailed them and they would email me back, and I would just sleep and work for those people for free for 4 days, you know?
Oh, wow. Wow.
I wanted to learn as much as possible because my mentor was like, if you get stuck in one place, you're never going to be a good chef. You know, this profession is about constantly learning. And today my book collection has grown a lot, that my wife wants me to start giving some away. I'm like, no. Yeah. So it's a process that you never stop learning, and it's also teaching other people, you know, and that I am the kind of person, when I travel, I like to learn the culture, the food, and the best way to do that is in the streets. You know, the food, the street foods are the ones who's going to dictate how that country eats, how that country runs, you know? Mm-hmm. So being a fine dining chef, you're going to find me eating street food all the time, you know, and that's what I love. You know, I love that I can learn something new from somebody else that has never had a training in the culinary arts, and they do it so well. They dedicate their lives to that specific product, to they have it down. And as a chef, we are striving for something that we're never going to get. We're never going to get perfection, mm-hmm. you know, but we get that high of, oh, we're achieving it. You know, we fool ourselves, basically.
Right. But you're constantly evolving.
Yes, we're constantly evolving. We're constantly learning. And one of the things, you know, I love about this profession is that out of nowhere, you learn something new every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's highly creative. Do you feel like you're kind of that would be a good description of who you are? Is that you're a creative?
Yeah, I am creative. You know, food for me in my early days became an obsession, became, you know, all about the fine dining scene and everything when I was an intern and a young chef. I wanted to express through food my art, basically. But then it changed. As soon as I hit my 30s and my mother got sick and everything, there was a period of my life where I just got burned out from everything that I thought that I loved, because I lost myself during those 10 years. It was Melissa always in the kitchen, you know. Melissa was trying to define something that I couldn't define it, because I couldn't define myself, you know. Mm. And when I came back, I actually started working out of the kitchens, and then I took a year off because I got burned. And that year, I actually find out why I love cooking. I reconnected to who I really was trying to define, and that was me, my life, and my personal struggles. I am mixed. My father is native Indian Mayan with Portuguese, and my mother Sicilian Italian. So in the summers, my parents would take us to Honduras for half of the summer, the other half to Italy. And that half of the summer in Honduras, my grandmother, who was 5 feet tall, you know, this very native woman, would teach us her heritage and all this amazing knowledge that she had. Growing up, I struggled a lot defining who I was, you know. Still into my young adult life, I still was like, huh, I'm never going to use this. This is not me, you know. And then finally, in my 30s, it clicked. It is me. It is my heritage. It's who I am, you know. And I learned the respect that everything is a living thing, that you have to respect it. And I learned that by defining myself, by embracing my heritage, both of my heritage, my cooking actually took a total different direction, and it actually reflected what I really was trying to do in the beginning, but I was struggling so much, you know. Mm-hmm. And I started embracing more of my heritage, and through that, it just clicked. It was like, okay. And I went back to the kitchen, and this time I didn't have nothing to prove. This time was cooking, because my soul was dictating what I wanted to cook, what I wanted to put in that plate. And it was a totally different experience. It's the kind of a moment where a chef goes, this is what I want, and I'm okay with it. I don't have any more an eagle. This is what I'm looking for. And then the journey just started with server catering. I wanted it to cook the old fashioned way, you know, done it right, nothing overproduced, give the credit to the people who needed to be given to, which is the farmers. You know, they put so much into what they do for a living. So my job as a cook now is to take the flavor out of the food and present it to you the way that it was meant to be cooked and eaten. You know, I don't disguise it. I don't do anything that is not supposed to be done. There's not too many spices, and I cook with a lot of fresh herbs and salt and pepper, basically. And so far, clients are loving it, and it works.
That's awesome. Do you find that or in reflection, do you find that when you stopped trying to prove to other people and went ahead and accepted and embraced what your business needed to be and the life that it needed to take, that that's when you kind of found your success path?
Yes, it did. You know, as a fine dining chef in Europe, I was already being established and I was getting noticed. And then I made the transaction to come back home. And here I was not taking the credit my executive chef was. I was just a sous chef. Mm-hmm. And the food always was amazing, the flavor, the presentation. But my soul was not in it. You know, repetition makes perfect. And it was repetition always perfect, you know. But it makes sense that emotionally I was not connected to that, what I was reproducing. Now that I am connected to it, and I always have pride for my work, but now it's a much deeper connection. Mm-hmm. Working from, you know, building my business from the ground up has taught me so much, and I have so much pride on it. And that connection was necessary for me to evolve as a person and as a chef too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You mentioned about the farmers, something about the farmers, and I want you to kind of elaborate a little bit more on that. Your connection with them and with what they produce that ultimately allows you to create what you do in your catering business. Tell me where that connection with the farmers came from.
That connection came from me trying to reconnect with my heritage. My grandmother owned about 30 acres, what it was considered outside the city, which now is inside the city in La Ceiba in Honduras. And she had from ducks, from chickens to pigs, any animal, and you name it. And she used to grow her own stuff too. Mm-hmm. So when I came back to the United States, that I started working, I basically didn't do anything different in my lifestyle, but I gained so much weight, you know, just to eating the over-produced food and everything that is in it. And basically, I became diabetic.
Wow.
And so I had to made a choice. So the choice was, let's start getting informed about the local organic, you know, small farmers. And I found out that there were some, but just New Orleans has, you know, it's a foodie town, but they're not embracing that part of the food business. You know, they're not embracing their local farmers. So I was one of the beginning chef that I'm a huge advocate for locally sourced food, to start pushing that. And it wasn't easy. It was hard, but every farmer that I go into business, I go one day, spend the day with them, learn about their business, you know, learn the techniques they do, and learn about them. You know, that's one principle. Why you want this lifestyle? Because this lifestyle is very hard. What drives you to do this, you know? And that right there, the responsibility that I have once I get their products, it's a huge responsibility, you know? And I try to honor that in every dish that I do. And we have grown. I mean, now there is more small farmers in Louisiana. We have expanded to Mississippi and Alabama. Oh, wow. And the movement in the city is growing. We have now a farmers market and 5 days a week, and every Saturday you're gonna find me in that farmers market saying hello to my vendors, buying my personal groceries, getting product for my business too. And you know, if you go to my Instagram, give them the spotlight in my Instagram, shooting small videos with them. I have built a business, you know, with them, basically. Yeah. And I'm just the tool that cooks the food and serve it to the client. They're actually the machine that reproduces everything that my hands get to it. So you're going to find stories about them in my Instagram, in my personal webpage, in my blog, everything. That's my lifeline, basically.
Yeah. Do you feel like, though, that it's become a bigger mission, a bigger calling to unite the food that we eat and the food that is prepared to a little bit more of a slower movement and more seasonality to it? Do you find that that's kind of, to me, what you do actually speaks that. It breathes life into that. It's not just, you know, people talking about it. You are actionably taking those steps in order to make sure that that message and that mission is moving forward, but not just in word alone. You're putting your actions behind that. So do you feel that that's where our food movement has to go?
Yeah. You know, I feel that, you know, we lost our way. As a country, United States reproduce the biggest amount of food, processed food in the world. Mm-hmm. And about 40% of that food that we reproduce is wasted.
Oh, gosh.
So that tells you a lot. I just finished actually doing a documentary about food waste. And it's shocking when you go and read the reports, the statistics of what, you know, everything that is wasted. Because big farming is a huge business. This has become a business. It's not anymore a necessary source of living, you know. And big farmer has traded basically from quality food to mass production and everything. So you have to know what you're putting into your body. You have to say, hey, I'm allergic to flour. You're not allergic to flour. You're allergic to the chemicals there is in that process of the flour. You actually, you know, you go to your local supermarket, you grab a bread here in New Orleans is Bunny, but you know, it's the white, cheap bread. You buy it and, you have to put, that bread was made a week ago. It has a shelf already a week in the factory. Then 2 weeks sitting in the supermarket. And then it sits about 2 months in your house and it still doesn't have mold. That has to make you think, what's inside? That is not flour. That is all chemicals, you know. And then you go into your small vendor artisan bread maker and you're going to pay more. You're going to pay, I pay about between $6 and $8 a loaf of bread. But that loaf of bread, you know, the quality in it, you're eating real flour, real wheat into it. And 2 weeks later, you're going to see the mold growing. So you have to consume that, you know, between a week and 2 weeks, or it's going to start going bad. Mm-hmm. That's the difference about it. You're not allergic to the flour. You're allergic to the chemicals. It's there is a documentary on YouTube where they put a camera into it, and basically it's a pig butchering factory. And, you know, you can see where they're cutting from the pig the part that has cancer, and they're selling the other part. So what it's telling you when they're mass producing these pigs, you know, what they're giving them, it's producing cancer. And then it's not just one part of the body, it has it. And then the other part that you can't tell, you're consuming that, you know. Right. If I go into my local farmer here in Louisiana and I go to Covington, you know, I have a farmer who has different breeds of pigs and they're free. They're going around the property, you know, you can touch them, you can play with them. They're eating a natural diet to them, you know, what's in the woods, what the farmer gives them and everything. And that's the difference between the small farmer that's doing the things right and the big farming, which they're just eating grain with so much chemicals in it because it's a dollar number to them, you know. Oh, the bigger the pig, the more money I can produced. So as a society, we don't take into account where we put our money. Mm-hmm. You know, if we go with the small guy, we're giving that small guy a life. We're honoring their hard work. We're paying for ballet classes for their kid, the electric bill, everything. The money stays in the community, and the community grows.
Exactly.
It's everything connected. You know, you want a better health, go buy to the farmer's market. You know, nowadays, buying in the farmer's market and buying in a regular supermarket, there is no difference.
I know.
So people think they're, it's sad, you know, and that starts with educating people. And that's what I'm trying to do. And, you know, that's why I do things like this, because I want to educate people. I want them to have a better lifestyle and in a way reconnect with the way they're supposed to reconnect with food. Food is not about how much I can put on the table. It's good food and what conversations are talked into that table. You know, you sit around with your family members and you talk about your life and the day, how the day went. And those are the best memories. When you're sick, you want instantly chicken soup.
Yeah.
You know,
because it has a memory with it.
Exactly. You have a memory with it. So, and you're looking to revive that memory when you have a cold, you know, and most of the time is because your mom used to cook it for you when you were younger, or your grandmother, depending who took care of you. But you relate that soup with that memory and being sick. So in the end, food is life. Food is memory. You cannot change it.
So what do you think of the up and coming, you know, food movement with the young chefs that are working to become, you know, they're not chefs yet, but they're working in culinary to become chefs. What does that look like? And do we have a disadvantage in the United States because it's become so, you know, education oriented and less about the conversation, where you learned more about that in another country versus, you know, what we teach here?
Well, first of all, as you know, as a culture that we are, we have given a full sense to the younger generation that they think they're going to be rock stars. You know, the Food Network has put so much into, you know, like a business. To say, hey, become a cook, become a chef, you're going to be rich, you're going to have fame and all this. This profession, it's not about that. You know, you go to culinary school, we're the only country in the world that charge you thousands of dollars to learn a trade profession. You go to Europe, this is free, you know. And I'm not putting down the culinary schools system. It's just, for me, it's mind-boggling that you get charged $60,000 or $70,000 to go to culinary school to teach you something that you are already learning if you cook at home with your mom, you know? Right. And it's a profession that, as a chef, you're probably going to make $60,000 to what the cap, maybe it's $100,000 with an amazing restaurant, they're going to pay you. It doesn't mean that once you get off of culinary school, you are a chef. Don't get me wrong. No, it doesn't mean that. When you get off of culinary school, you have a degree that says that you know the basics of the culinary world. You know how to make a sauce, you know how to make a stock, you know the basics of it. Now, working in a restaurant, on the catering company, or whatever you're going to work on, is totally different. Those skills that you learn in school are going to come handy, and then you're going to adapt them to the real world, and then that's when your real education begins.
And it's almost like the culinary schools are teaching a skill, but they're not teaching the art. And when you get out, you have to in order to be a great chef, you need to have that art and that creative side of it as well. And that's where it'll separate those that just want to have a job versus those that want to create and those that want to build something and have a deeper meaning in it. Do you see a correlation in the fact that that is, I mean, a skill versus the art?
Yeah, I see it. So I had a student, I had a guy that I hired when I was executive chef of a restaurant, and he came to me, he just graduated from culinary school. He thought he was a chef. So, you know, like everything, I told him, look, I'll hire you, you know, but you're going to have to start in the bottom. And he thought he was going to have my job the day that I hired him. I was like, no, you're going to start in the bottom. So he came in with his fancy roll of knives, you know, and very expensive knives. And my other cooks just looked at him and, you know, I smiled because I knew that he was going to get eaten by the charge. The kitchen is very competitive, you know. Okay. So he made sure that everybody knew he just graduated from culinary school, that he knew what he was doing. So I didn't say anything. So when we started working, you know, that day one of my dishwasher called off. So I was like, let's call him John just to refer him.
Okay.
Was like, hey, John. Do you mind jumping in the dish pan and doing the dishes? He looked at me and he thought that I just slapped him in the face, that he was too good for that. And he was like, no, I am a chef. I'm not going to do that. So I was like, okay. So I call my sous chef. I was like, hey, Jordan, can you explain to John what is the ranking in this field? And she's smiling. She's like, sure, chef, I will. So Jordan went and pointed to one of the dishwashers. And so she told him, look, you see the dishwasher? Yeah. That dishwasher is my B for the prep cooks and for the line cooks. The prep cooks and the line cooks are my B. I'm not going to say the word, of course. Okay, and I am the sous chef, and I am Chef B, and Chef is the B for the customers. So that's the hierarchy. What do you want to fit in? Because in an hour into the shift, he couldn't cut it. You know, he couldn't cut the hard work. He couldn't keep up in the line, you know, and I'm not the kind of chef that I would just sit there and give orders. I go in the line and cook. I had to push him out of the way. My line was going down and, you know, he couldn't do it. So I had to push him down out of the line. And then he was breaking all the dishes when we put him in the dishwashing area. And I was like, dude, I'm sorry. You want to start? I'll hire you. I'll hire you like a dishwasher. Why? Because this is, yeah, you have to earn it, but not because I wanted to humiliate him or anything else. It wasn't about that. It was about the sense that when you learn how to run properly at a dishwashing station, that you don't break any dishes and you do it fast and sufficient, you're ready to be a prep cook. You know, once you move it to a prep cook, you're going to learn, you're going to put it into basics, all that learning that you did in culinary school. And once you master prep cook, you're going into line. And that's when that speed of dishwashing and prepping comes together, because you have about 4 to 6 minutes to put a dish together. Mm-hmm. And I don't want a dish that is just slap in the plate. I want a dish that is perfect in presentation, in taste, and everything. A lot of people is like, oh, you taste one. No, I teach my cooks that you taste to the process of cooking that food. Mm-hmm. You put the garlic in there. Okay, great. Let's taste it. How much garlic is in there? It's perfect. It's overwhelming. Change it. Add more to this. You know, the next step. Let's do it. Every step you're tasting it to the final product that you put in that plate, and it has to be perfect. It has to. I want you, when you eat, let's say the chicken soup in my restaurant or in my catering company, I want you that first spoon, that all those memories just come through you, and you're like, oh my God, this is what my grandmother used to, cook. Right. And that memory, and I assure you, once you have that feeling, you will come back every time. And that's how you win your customers, you know, and knowing that the best product that you just put there, you work your ass off for it, you know, and that gives you more pride.
And food connects you to yourself. It connects you to your community. It connects you to your culture. It connects you to everything. And if we are eating just to blaze through shoving something in our mouth, we are depriving our very soul of exactly what the food was supposed to be intended for.
Exactly. I mean, you have to think about it, you know, when you're a meat eater, a living thing gave their life to feed you, honor it. Don't just trash it, you know. Animals, it's like, oh, the animals don't know better. Actually, they do. They have more humanity than we do in some cases.
Yep.
So honor it that living thing gave you life.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, man. I could talk forever about the animal aspect because we had a sustainable farm for 4 years and we raised the meats, you know? So, I mean, that's a whole nother topic for a whole nother day because we could continue on for 2 more hours jamming on the animals and the food system. I want to ask you though, this is just so invigorating to me because I do believe that everything we do and every action we have, and food being a big part of it, you know, there is a purpose behind it. And we've lost connection to that in our society in today's day and age. We've definitely lost connection to that in our fast-paced environment. But if you could change the world, if you could change the culinary world, I'll say, what would it be that you would want to change?
I think that's a question that for me is very personal. What I want to change, it's the way that people look at food, you know, and that's what a lot of chefs are working at right now. It's something very personal for me because as my heritage and in everything that I have done in my life, I want people to be educated, you know, to the job that a farmer does, you know, why they choose to have that lifestyle, why they do what they do, and have recognition, you know. The culinary world is very fast paced and it's very demanding. Once you become into this industry and you become a head chef, or you know you have your own restaurant, it's a beast that you have to feed it. There's no days off. There's no family time. So I want the people, you know, my customers, and the people that buys for me to be educated about this world and why we do it, you know, and to have that humanity on the product that we put out for my farmers, for my cooks, you know, for me as a person, because it gets lost, you know. Everything nowadays is about taking a picture, put it on Instagram, and how many likes you have, and you know how you do this. It's a necessary evil in some ways, but in other ways, it's just disconnect for a minute. Have a cup of tea and have a biscuit with butter, and you know, and then when you're eating that, just remember, you know, what it took to have that in your hands.
Be in the moment.
Live in the moment. Just forget about everything else, you know. There's a time in a human being life where your time period changes. You were born in this world, then at 10 years old, it changes and you become a little bit later in life, a teenager, and then in your 20s, you become a young adult. And then in your 30s, you're an adult, basically.
Right, matured.
Mature. And basically, my sister told me this. In your 20s, you want to eat your world, you don't know who the hell you are. You know, in your 30s, you fix all the mistakes that you did in your 20s. And then in your 40s, that's when you start living your life.
Yes. Yes. And
it's true. You know, in my 20s, I did a bunch of things that I was like, in my 30s, all right, I have to fix this, you know, and I had a sense of who I was. And then now in my 40s, I know who I am, and I am living my life, you know, and it changes. Every 10 years, it changes who you are, and it changes your soul. You become the person that you always thought you wanted to be, and you are, or you become something else, you know. And then there's dramatic changes that passes through your life, people that you say goodbye or experiences to live. So all that, you know, changes who you are in the way you see life and live your life, and mm-hmm. and this is relevant to food because it also affects the way you eat.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, if you're a person that has been raised in fast food because your mother didn't have time to cook, your family didn't have time to sit down and have a family meal, you always going to do that pattern to somebody else introduces it to you, sitting down, having a meal, having a conversation, and get to know who you are. And that pattern is changed completely. So for me as a chef, my job is to put my community first and put my experience and my cooking in your hands, and then introducing another option to you that life can be lived and eat different.
Wow. How is the entrepreneur?
That makes sense.
It totally does. But how has the entrepreneur journey, how has this journey changed you on a personal level?
Being a small business, it's a headache that a lot of people don't want. mm-hmm. It has shown me how reliable I can be by myself. It has taught me things that I never thought that I was going to be capable of doing. I started this business with only, you know, $1,000 in my bank account. Mm-hmm. I put in my name, a Mac computer that I still have actually in my home office. Wow. I made a research that I wanted to have just make one investment. I didn't want to have to keep investing in things, you know. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I was dating a person who was a graphic designer, and she used Mac, and I was open to person. So she's like, get a Mac, and I will introduce you into graphic design. I was like, okay. And, you know, and then little by little, I taught myself how to do graphic design. If you go to my website, everything in my website I have done. I have taught myself photography. I have taught myself marketing. I was one hand, 12 hat, 17 hat person. But out of that, it just gives me more pride. And nowadays, right. You know, that I have a customer saying, oh my God, that's an amazing website. Can I have the number of the web developer? And I smile. I'm like, well, actually, I did it. So, yes. It, you know, it's like, oh, can you design my website? I'm like, I don't think so. But I'm not a professional web designer. But, you know, it has come to another part that I am very proud. I actually find that I have a passion for web designing, you know. And I have done a couple of websites to friends and my wife's website for her business, but I keep it to there, you know. It sure. Have taught me to learn other things, you know, that come handy in life. Right. But it's a headache that, you know, you constantly, one of the things my wife is also nagging me about is being on the phone all the time. But I have to be on the phone because if my client call me, You know, I can't afford to lose that phone call, because that's a couple of grand, you know, a couple of $1,000 that I'm going to be losing. Exactly. So, you know, social media and my phone are my number one tools to get to new clients. So I'm always there. You know, you sacrifice some things as a business owner and you gain others. So you have to find that balance. Like Sundays for me are, Sundays are holy. I do not work on Sundays. I you know, I'm home with my family, and we do everything. Like, we go out of the city, we go to the beach, we go, you know, whatever we have, we want to do, we do it. If you get a voicemail on Sundays, you get my number, you're going to get a voicemail. You can leave your message. I will call you Mondays. I have made sacrifices, you know, to live the life that I want to live. You have to learn to balance, because I can't be consumed anymore of what I used to consume 24/7. You can't. You have to find a healthy balance between your business or your profession and who you are, so you can function in both of them, and it will reflect.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You're amazing. It's absolutely amazing having this conversation with you and this interview. And this is what I love about what I do. So since you're talking about that, though, where is your website and where can we find you on social media?
Okay. So the website is www.sabr, S as in Sam, A as in Apple, B as in Victor, E as in Ethan, U as in U-turn, R as in Robert, catering.com. Okay. Our Instagram is Sever Catering. You're going to find us there. And Facebook, the same thing, Sever Catering. And our logo actually is a pear. A very, if you see the logo, you know, it's very beautiful, but it's actually resembled the back of a woman.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's a very feminine logo. It's very beautiful. The graphic designer who did it, he was amazing, and it came much better than what I thought. So that you're gonna recognize us by the pair, you know.
That's awesome. And if they're in New Orleans, or if they visit New Orleans,
We are located in New Orleans, Louisiana. So, you know, we're in uptown right now. We are renovating as we speak a location 5 minutes away from New Orleans, which is in Chalmette. It's a suburb of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. We are going to be setting base there, which is a building that supports enough the catering company. And then in front, we'll have a small restaurant.
That's awesome. Melissa, I want to thank you for coming on today and talking about what is so passionately your calling. I mean, it's obvious just in this interview alone that this is what you are meant to do. And I want to thank you for being a guest today and being on this podcast, because there are so many things that I'm going to re-listen to it, because there's so much to learn in the words that you said. So thank you.
Hey, thank you for inviting me. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, excellent. So guys, in the podcast show notes, you're going to find the links to Melissa's business and where to find her and how to connect with her. And I want you to search that out, because there is a lot of neat information, and what she stands for is so powerful that it can't go unrecognized. So thank you for listening today to the FemNation podcast. And as always, keep moving forward.
Thanks for listening to the FemNation podcast. Be sure to check out our show notes for more details from the episode. If you love the show, share it with a friend or drop me a note. I'd love to hear from you over at whitedovegannon.com or find me on social media. Until next time, keep moving forward.